Around the NFL Podcast. The Big Bad Blogger Boy.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Greg Rosenthal, and I'm surrounded in a city filled with heroes in bunkers. Mark Sessler, Ricky Hollywood, and Patrick Claibon coming through for us. What's up?
What's up, Greg? Folks?
Big day for Patrick's. I mean, the show got delayed because our Patrick Claibon, had to jump back on television in his suit. He's wearing a tie right now, much better dressed than Mark or Ricky and I. And had to, had to report the big Patrick Mahomes contract, which started right before we started taping, which I feel like is good luck. You know, great day for Patrick's.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've had a few, I guess, good ones since the last good one, which was when Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl. But, like my daughter was born, I've taken over her room to do work stuff and talk to you guys, which is fun. But it's it was an interesting few minutes there because we had talked about, to open up the kimono a little bit, trying to do this around noon. And then I'd look at my Twitter timeline and it's like, oh, well, I guess they're going to want to do this. And so we had to wait for Mike Silver to get on the phone with somebody so we could do it. And it's like, yeah, they're going to give him a lot of money. All right, cool. See you later. Watch Total Access tonight.
And so, I mean, it's assured that this show, we float a starting time out there episode after episode. And it's something will get in the way. And this time it was real news. I mean, I would say also just to on the celebration of Patrick, you have, not that this is something that everyone celebrates equally, but an annual holiday of an Irish-based platform celebrating Patrick's in March every year. So
absolutely,
you're already winning. So
yeah, I pay homage to my Irish heritage. Yeah, didn't have a lot of say in the matter, but it's a fun shout out to look back.
Into our listeners
that made you.
Or maybe wondering, where's Dan at? I believe he's either hanging out with his brother, our host Dan Hansis, or he's, in day three of a three-part interview with the Gatesville Messenger. And just couldn't do the show. He will be back on Wednesday. We're still doing two shows a week until training camp starts, assuming it does start. And I feel like we're already into the news. Maybe let's do the chit chat at the end. I do want to do a catch up. I do want to do a catch up because I want to see what people were doing. This was the closest thing we had to an NFL-ish week off last week. But I feel like we're already into the news. So Ricky, let's do some news.
I think we finally arrived at the moment in time where we're going to say goodbye to this nickname that I clearly was racist and has been a blight on the league for a long, long time.
Well said there by Mike Silver talking about the Washington team name change. That was on air just a few hours ago with Patrick Claibon. Again, what a day. And we'll get to that news in just a minute. But we got to start with Mahomes. We already have. And Silver was the one who confirmed the story for us at NFL Network. But Adam Schefter broke it. And since he broke it, he's broken a few more terms. First of all, it's a 12-year contract. It's 10 new years tacked on to the two already left on his rookie deal. It is expected to total more than $400 million in total, but we don't really know any more details as we are taping this. First of all, I think Schefter, and I honestly was going to tweet about this last week. I wonder if Schefter and Ian keep track of when the other one is on vacation. Because I think that they work harder in those weeks to try to get over on the other guy. I at least know our guy Ian would do something like that. It's not even going after him. And I thought about that because the Cam Newton news broke. I did text with Ian a little bit last week. He was on vacation. And Schefter is loving dropping this bomb while Ian is wherever Ian is.
I mean, it's a competition that I think is tracked heavily by about 0.3% of the country. It's basically just sports readers. You are definitely, but you know, I think one of the privileges of just enjoying sports from a distance would be to not have to worry about when Ian is on vacation and Adam Schefter is dropping A-bombs on a social media platform. But you are correct.
I only mentioned it because it took a while to confirm it. And that's just rare in today in this media landscape that someone actually has some exclusive news for that long. And it's ultimately news that, you know, we expected at some point, but we just didn't know when it was going to happen, Patrick.
And I think, like, in terms of the competition, it kind of plays into the way that we consumed it today, right? Because you mentioned how Schefter has kind of part and parceled this out. And I think he would, if it were not for the climate, right, of like, oh, what's Ian doing right now, that he would probably, you know, kind of chill out and be like, oh, let's get some total terms. Oh, so it's going to be 12 total years. They're tacking it on. Oh, this is the up to number. But it was just like, hey, 10 years, 10 years Patrick Mahomes. Hey, what's up? Everybody react to this, which is like, cool. Like, I'm not a reporter. Like, I'm not Adam Schefter. I've seen that guy grind all the time. But, you know, when we're talking about contracts, that initial part of the conversation like dominates so much of the perception, where that the up to number gets out there and everybody's like, oh my God, they're going to give him $11 billion. But it's like, that's not what it means.
Yeah. I've already seen a lot of takes, and when it comes to the money of it all, none of them make sense. It's a boring, repetitive take that we've had on this show that you got to wait and see. Even the takes that are like, why would Patrick Mahomes do this? Like, why sign any 10-year contract? You gotta see the deal. And Schefter did indicate it is believed that he'll have the contract tied to a percentage of the salary cap number, which we've heard talked about forever as a possibility. And it makes a lot of sense for these really high level players, especially quarterbacks. And it sounds like that's exactly what's going to happen here. I'm guessing, you know, we'll find out what that percentage is. Again, it could be the total deals, I think 420 something million right now, but it could be more as the salary cap goes up. And my guess is, and we'll see, you know, whatever percentage of the salary cap he's taken up in the next few years, you know, we'll, that's the percentage he's going to want to be taking up in the future too. And so if you're Patrick Mahomes, any deal is a no-brainer, because why step on the field again until you just sign the contract that changes your life, your family's life forever? The key is the next few years. After that, they'll figure it out. Things are going to change. Patrick Mahomes will change. The NFL will change. But he's locked in, and I'm assuming he's getting paid a fair amount of money for the next few seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's a deal that harks back to not pre this CBA, but kind of action that happened pre the previous CBA, when you had guys like Donovan McNabb signing 12-year extensions, Drew Bledsoe, people mentioned. But the 10-year commitment in the league, and, you know, we talked about it with John Gruden, that stands out there as such an unusual deal between the Raiders and their coach. But just like from an NFL standpoint, 10 years ago, we were weeks away from Sam Bradford signing his rookie deal with the St. Louis Rams. So it's just such an incredible amount of time that I'm glad for both parties. Why not lock Mahomes down for as long as you can? I simply don't concern myself with the numbers in the contract beyond, you know, a couple years from now, as you said, Greg, because none of those contracts that they mentioned that go on for 10 plus years live to see the light of day. I mean, it's sort of just it's a huge commitment, and I think that matters a lot, and you've got a wiggle room there. But the idea that Mahomes is going to be there on these terms 10 years from now would be shocking to me.
Yeah, and that's something that we even see with like 3 and 4 year deals, where we're reporting a 3 and 4 year deal, and then turns out 2 years after that, somebody's on their way out. And it's like, well, that 3 year, $40 million contract turned out to be neither one of those. And so, like, yeah, I'm happy for Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, once we find out more, you know, good. But he's arguably the best player in the NFL. So, yeah, he should get a lot of money, and we shouldn't pay any attention to people who complain about it.
They do seem to agree with Greg's. You know, Greg, you've floated out there that you think that Mahomes could go down as the greatest quarterback of all time, which, you know, you said that before even the Super Bowl. It doesn't feel that much of a stretch at this point. But it's basically them saying, and they told us before Mahomes, in that combine before Mahomes took the starting role, that behind the scenes, they were just in love with him. And they've been on board all along. And it obviously the other Twitter reaction is the spotlight that it points on every team, the Jaguars, the Bears, everyone else that passed on this guy, that he's not going away. He's going to haunt that narrative for a decade to come.
Right. He has played better in his first two seasons as a starter than any football player, any quarterback I've ever seen. And I don't think it's that close. And just what he can do as a player, you know, we were saying that after eight games. I don't think we even needed to see these full 2 years. I think this is a 10-year deal that he could get to the end of in theory. Like I can still imagine him being on the Chiefs in 10 years, but I imagine it'll be more like Aaron Rodgers, who has signed some contracts, which at the time were record-setting, market-setting deals. And then he's just, you know, signed a bunch of contracts since, well before those deals ended. And you do think of, you know, if we're doing a winners and losers here, it's like, it is great to be a Chiefs fan, and it's great to be Andy Reid. And it's great to be Patrick Mahomes' teammates that are going to play with him too. It's great to be, you know, Patrick Mahomes' wife or fiance. I'm not, is he married? You know, it's great to be a lot of people, but especially Andy Reid, who you followed around. I mean, I do think that it is such an important part of the story, is that I think Patrick Mahomes would have been a transcendent player no matter what, but he did happen to end up with, like, the one of, if you know, the greatest play callers I've ever seen. The fact that those two guys are going to be together probably about as long as Andy Reid wants to be together is something. And they're you're going to have to deal with that for as long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy.
It's symbiotic, because certainly if you're Andy Reid and you were thinking about maybe a third stop as a coach at some point, if Alex Smith were still your quarterback, this ties you to Kansas City for the long haul too. And you could have a Bill Belichickian career if Mahomes lives up to, you know, I always think back to like the Aaron Rodgers team that knocked out the Steelers in the Super Bowl. And back when that happened 10 years ago, we were thinking, of course, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers will win five more of those. And of course, you'd lock him down for 10 years. And they've not won one since. So it just doesn't always go quite as smoothly. But why, this feels like a no-brainer other than that.
Yeah, it's so fleeting, like the idea of success. In fact, like so fleeting that you go back to a moment early on last season where Patrick Mahomes' knee is bent backwards.
And that's true.
A fraction of an inch could have determined whether or not they won the Super Bowl at all, or he even played football for the rest of the year. And you look at the way things have progressed since then, here he's got this mega contract, which could balance on a needle in terms of whether or not it happened. And here we are. We're in a situation where the season could be balancing on a needle, and it's like people have to make decisions. And like the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes both bet on football existing in 10 years, and Patrick Mahomes still being good on it. So it works out.
That's the thing. And we're going to get to all the latest on what the NFL and the NFLPA are negotiating when it comes to the pandemic. But I do think getting paid in the pandemic is tricky. Like only the most valuable people are getting new big money. And I mean that somewhat for NFL players. I mean that more just everywhere. I sort of made a half joking tweet about Bomani Jones from ESPN getting a new contract during the pandemic. It's like, hey, if you're getting a new contract during the pandemic, that's for like the upper shelf. You know what I mean? That's for like, everyone's great that, you know, works there and blah, blah, blah. But you're only getting it if you're near the cream of the crop. That's Patrick Mahomes. That's Bomani. I mean,
that has
too.
To be the most Greg-esque storyline of the entire offseason. Tracking people's contracts at different networks. I mean, I don't know anyone who would be more dipped in intrigue with that than Greg.
We have some personal, like, hey, this is our industry, so I'm curious how it's
going. Well, I'm not banking on a new contract. Well, I'm
curious about how... Look, all of the fallout and repercussions from this is going to be for everyone in every industry, but are selfishly.
I'll absolve Greg on the meat peeping situation of watching other people's media contracts, because you know it kind of ties into everything right now. To Greg's point, like there's so much uncertainty everywhere, and we've watched our industry first of all be undermined and undercut and destroyed by vulture capitalists. But aside from that, you know, just folks not wanting to pay for good work. And so like if somebody's worth it now, If companies feel good about right. it, then yeah, it's not necessarily Greg being like, oh, like those blogs that are like, Katie Nolan got 63.
Right. No, I know. It's the opposite.
It was, it's a sweet spot for Greg.
It was the feeling. Say. It is. But it also was the feeling. A, we're seeing some people getting treated cold during this pandemic. Yeah. We know about that, and that's the case maybe any year in this business. So it's not just now.
But 10 years. Is long though.
Right, especially like now that's... And the second is I like Bomani's podcast, so I was just that was giving him a shout out, a little compliment, that's all. 10 years is long. What years? You're doubting it. You're one of those people that is like, because there is like the salary cap people, it's like, well, how are they gonna win? It's like,
I'm not doubting
you can figure it out how to win around Patrick Mahomes,
but what if he in 10 years, like what if in 4 years he has like an Alex Smith type injury, and like 10 years, I mean, maybe it's just me being afraid of commitment in general, but 10 years is like a long time.
Well, that's the thing. And it's probably a thing that you need to, consider.
Seek therapy?
It's just writing contracts with people that are close and personal to you. So that you can have an out like in 2 to 3 months, maybe, where it's right. like, hey, if you have an opinion on Shawshank Redemption that doesn't necessarily jive with the way that I feel about it. We Deal won't breaker. Talk to each other anymore.
Well, I do that with my friends and my wife. It's all about the guaranteed money. It's like, it's all about the guaranteed money up front. Because like maybe the friendship or the relationship, it ends after 4 or 5 years. But at that point, you can get out without as much.
Are you and Emeka okay?
No, I'm
right. I mean, how much guaranteed money have you offered your wife? I would. Yeah. I think you should know the figure. You could break that news
it,
right now.
It was it was a joke. It was not to be taken seriously. But to answer your question seriously, Erica, when we find out the details, it'll be like any contract where the guarantees are not. Throughout the deal, it'll be complicated, but they'll, if something terrible happened, you can always get out of it. And if not, then you're just, going to have some salary cap hits for a couple of years, like the Washington team does with Alex Smith for the last few years, which I think provides our segue here. Let's get to it. I can't believe this is not the top story of the day that shows what a solid day of news it is that while we were gone last week over the 4th of July holiday, the Washington football team released a statement after really interesting and intense pressure from corporations that they would stop working with their team unless they changed their team nickname. The Washington football team released a statement. I never thought I'd see the day. Actually, I did think I'd see the day, but maybe not this soon and not under this ownership, that they are going under a review to change their team name. And our guy Ian Rappaport, this was what he got called in on vacation about, reported it is likely they are changing the team name. There's no way that they're going to go through this review and stick with it. And I think the only question is how quickly does it happen? Is it happening before this season, which their coach Ron Rivera says he hopes and I think is probably realistic, and how that affects the uniform and everything. But, a pretty... I would say exciting day for the NFL. Roger Goodell said he was fully supporting it. And to me, this has been one of those third rail topics on this podcast and with the NFL in general for decades. And it's nice to know that that discussion is going away, Patrick.
And it's been so freeing, right? Because you've called it the Washington football team a few times. There's been times where I've felt pressure, right? Because if you're on a show, I've maintained my entire career working for the NFL that I don't want to say the name, just from a standpoint of it's a slur. And that's how I've always felt about it. But, you get emails, you get tweets. It's like, hey, you got to say the name. Why aren't you saying the name? And it's like, well, one, because I don't want to. I've felt like I need to, because somebody who has power might tell me that, this is something that we need to do. And so it's very relieving. It's very freeing to be able to have the conversation like with Mike Silver, where I don't feel like I'm as bulletproof as Mike, but I can be on TV while Mike calls it racist. And, I'm not going to push back on that because it's a slur. So, yeah, like considering the structure of America and, what a lot of people have come to realize in the year 2020, it just doesn't really have a place. If you're going to name the team now, nobody in their right mind would be like, oh yeah, let's name it the slur. So then Why would we still have it? And it sucks that it took, you know, multiple people being murdered and millions of people to get in the streets for it to happen. But it's happened. So I'm glad that we can move on. And, you know, people who haven't been able to buy apparel, people who haven't been able to say the name of the team, they can embrace it now. And that's a good thing. I'm thinking people are starting to realize that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's very evident to all that the Redskins did not lead the charge here. Our world and our society led the charge and put Daniel Snyder, who in 2013, really when this podcast started, and it's been a topic that we've touched on through the duration of this show, basically
especially
said
at
it would
the beginning
never change
for
it.
A while. It was really hot at the beginning, I remember.
Absolutely.
In our newsroom. It was kind of the controversial topic for quite a long time.
Yeah, and I you know, this is one of the few teams that in sports that did not put out a statement after the George Floyd incident. And I think one of the reasons, reading an Athletic article, they said basically that the issue is when they go and do that, then their name becomes the focal point of that tweet because it's hanging out there as something that is out of joint with where we're going. So, you know, I think plenty of players supported a change years ago, but there is certainly, even now, you look at some of the old school Washington stars who probably because that was just the team they were on, were more open-minded, or I should say just open to the idea that that was their tradition, saying get rid of it now because we are in a polar shift as we should be. And this should have happened a long time ago, but this organization has struggled, and we've studied with other things this offseason. They've struggled with things that should have happened a long time ago.
It's a really fascinating story on a few levels, but I do want to read the words of the National Congress of American Indians who have been, you know, fighting this for a while. And they wrote in a statement, "This moment has been 87 years in the making, and we have reached this moment thanks to decades of tireless efforts by tribal leaders, advocates, citizens, and partners to educate America about the origins and meaning of the R word. The NCAA looks forward to immediately commencing discussions with the league and team how they will change the team's name and mascot. Indian country deserves nothing less. The time to change is now." And that leads us to, you know, what they will do with the name. And supposedly there's two names that have, you know, come to the forefront. And the statement by Ron Rivera was the one quoted in it, not ownership, did mention Native history, but also mentioned military history and supposedly, and we don't know that these are the two names, but these are the two that keep getting floated out there. So I'm guessing these are the two names that Ron Rivera mentioned that he likes. Two names that are being talked about are the Red Tails, which, you know, has a World War II, you know, black air fighting background, and then the Warriors, which would be more of like a Native background. And those are the two. Those are the two that they're thinking about. I don't know if I have a take on like which they should do or whatever, but it's really interesting to see Ron Rivera be so front and center. There's reporting that Dan Snyder, that the owner, has been out of the country. And look, Rivera, just like he did with kind of representing the team after the murder of George Floyd, is doing the same now. You know, is the one kind of representing them. And so when you sign up for that coaching job, especially right now, because there's no executives there like Bruce Allen, that's part of what you're signing up for. It's a little different than other teams.
And it's unfortunate that, you know, over the course of the franchise's history, once they started allowing minorities to play on the team, that minority players, fans have kind of bore the brunt of this conversation. And it's unfortunate that Ron Rivera, one of four minority coaches in the NFL, is kind of tasked with handling this. But you feel better, I guess, with him in that position than the person who has maintained over the course of that he is not changing the name. And so, it took a lot to get Dan Snyder where he is now. I don't know what role other people will play in making a name change. I know personally, my father's from Tuskegee. I've tried to meet every Tuskegee Airman that I could.
Well, for our listeners, especially overseas, but anywhere, can you give us a little background that might not be familiar with?
Red Tails is a reference to a fighter squadron, flew P-51 Mustangs, the Tuskegee Airmen in World War II. They were mainly a bomber escort group. at a time where, you know, the power structure of the American military didn't necessarily allow black men or women to be in leadership roles or even be in the same platoons or divisions as white soldiers. And they had a sterling record as far as escorting bombers, never losing one over the course of their years in Germany. And, you know, they came home, you know, should have been heroes, but were denied access to a lot of the programs that made, you know, that era of America, quote unquote, great. You know, your access to the GI Bill wasn't the same as a black American. And so there's so much American history tied into that. And, you know, for me personally, any name is an upgrade over a slur. Right. But for me personally, you know, the small handful of those men that we have left, I'd want to hear from them, because if we can honor their legacy and history with the name and they feel good with it, I'm all for it. But I would hate to see those men and the sacrifices and what they did, and what they had to deal with when they returned home. I would hate to see them reduced to a mascot, but if they're okay with it, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, if they're okay with it, that would be my preference too, because if the other option, and there probably will be others out there, but Warriors to me, obviously I think of the NBA team and I think of like 850 high schools scattered across the country with the same very well-tread nickname. So I would prefer the previous, and it feels original, it works, and it would be quite a spectrum shift from what the right. team was named previously.
Well, and I don't want to spend the whole show on this, but it really is like worth going back and looking how this happened, because last week there was a report that 87 investment firms, at least this was the first that I saw of it, and if either of you want to correct me, 87 investment firms sent letters to FedEx and Pepsi, some of the biggest sponsors of Washington, of the football team, and said, if they don't change the name, like, we're going to, you know, stop supporting you. And then pretty quickly, Pepsi, FedEx, and Nike, you know, within days, all threatened to remove their sponsorship from the team. Now, FedEx's owner is a minority owner of the team, and their name is on the field. And Nike right now took all the Washington, you know, apparel offline, and they did that even before, they announced that they're going to look into changing the name, and it's still offline. And on top of that, there's been reports that these minority owners, including, you know, the owner of FedEx, all want to sell their shares of the team too, which is another part of it. I think even whether it remains to be seen whether that changes based on the name change or not, but that's been the reporting that's going to be part of this story too. So I can't help but think back. We were just talking about this. I think it was the last time you were on the show, Patrick. It's very similar to how the government threatened this team with finances, basically, unless they allowed black players onto the team, that they would have problems with their stadium in Washington. And again, here, it wasn't the government, it was corporations saying, basically, we're going to take away your money. And the decision was almost made for them. It's just sort of fascinating how, what is it, 60, almost 60 years later, it repeats itself.
And it's kind of, you know, freed Dan Snyder from having to say that he made the decision himself, because he's maintained it the entire time that he's owned the football team, that he's not changing the name. And I'd like to think that, well, it's not that I'd like to think, it's what I think, in terms of, like, you know, we're going to sell our shares in the team. That might be something to, you know, give Dan Snyder a little more freedom, because I would hesitate to believe that these men, who have made a lot of money, would short the value of the thing that they're trying to sell, before they sell it.
Right. Right. And it's 40% of the team. So it's not like, you know, Venus and Serena Williams and Gloria Estefan selling their shares of the Dolphin. this is like 40% is like, you know, NFL ownership is going to have to approve all that. Like, that is a big chunk.
Well, and behind the scenes, I mean, the FedEx CEO, Fred Smith, is Dan Snyder reported looks up to him and thinks very highly of him. So I think that this created a tectonic shift. And, you know, but it's not so long ago that corporate interests were one of the reasons, and money attached to that and lost money were the reasons that Colin Kaepernick was not getting jobs with all sorts of teams. I mean, so now look how much has changed.
Now he's signing production deals with Disney, which is not part of our news rundown, but it is fascinating. You're right. It is a changing world, and part of that is the pandemic. And so let's get into like this week in COVID news, which which is tough. It's been a while since we've talked, and I feel like there's been a lot that's happened on this front. And Mark and I were talking about this, and you could almost part of the last 20, 25 minutes of the show, not with an asterisk, but I just feel like everything almost right now, and the Washington team name is a great reason that disproves this rule. But like almost anything we talk about football wise feels beside the point to talking about like how is the coronavirus going to impact this season. As we get closer to the season, it just feels like that's the conversation. And that's what part, and it might not be fun. And of course, we're going to be previewing the season and talking about other stuff too. But it's like that's the conversation, because that's the world we're living in terms of this football league. And that it kind of reminds me a little bit of the lockout, where it's like the only thing you could talk about until the lockout was over was the lockout. And it's like almost everything we're going to be able to talk about on this show, it's going to have to be related to how the NFL is moving forward. And so there's a lot to get to. But basically, the NFL and the NFLPA are going back and forth and trying to figure out the rules in which they are going to do so. The NFL sent out some rules, and we'll talk about those. But I'll start it with just to talk about the preseason, that the NFLPA reportedly doesn't want to play a preseason. And the NFL, you know, was expected to announce that it was going to be reduced to 2 games. They never did announce that. You know, a lot of reporters said this is going to be announced Thursday last week, and it never happened. So the NFLPA is pushing back against that. And I think Devin and Jason McCourty, who have a podcast, said it pretty well. Like, they're not even worried about 4 games, 2 games of preseason. They're worried about the on-ramp process to the start of training camp. And like, we'll worry about preseason when we get there, because we have to worry about all these rules and how we're going to even start getting back safely, because it's pretty soon. The initial proposal from the NFL, not to keep honking, but is for the rookies, some rookies, to show up July 19th. So that's 13 days from when we're taping this. That is pretty soon. And the rules of how they're going to figure that all out, you know, are changeable, but the NFL did put some things out there. Mark, I don't know what stood out to you from what's been out there.
Well, I think it's the players need to be taken very seriously. And if you look at the letter that the NFLPA president, J.C. Treader, the Brown Center, wrote, I think it's I've never really seen the NFL and all the sports linked together this way ever in our lifetime, where you're monitoring how athletes and other leagues are taking charge and taking stands and a stance on the seasons to come. And the NFL, the players seem to favor the idea of a 48-day run-up minus games that would get them better prepared for week one. But, you know, as Mike Garofolo tweeted last week about comments from some of the players, it's sort of more like, if there's so much concern nationally about this virus and it's rising the way it is, and this is the question they're asking, why are we returning to work to begin with? And where I think about a month ago, we felt in a place where we were thinking, hey, you know what? The ramp up is happening, and you can kind of see society shifting and opening up again. And there were issues with that, but you could see a way for sports to happen if things continued on that path. Well, the path has been utterly imploded. The path doesn't exist right now. We're the lone country in the world that decided in various pockets to treat this politically and completely different. And I just, you know, some of the whispers now and some of the issues coming out of some sources, and some of this is on The Athletic, it's reported elsewhere, is that people inside teams are saying we have not been given detailed enough ideas on how we get from today to a couple weeks from now, when we have people here all the time. That in other sports, testing is not happening as quickly as it should. Teams are having in baseball to take it out on their own to get stuff done. I just think that you're talking about an immense labyrinth. And by the other thing they would talk about, that this is not a bubble situation like the NFL. They've used the word ecosystem, but yeah. Ecosystem has not worked anywhere else in this country outside of the ecosystem being in your own home for the most part?
Yeah, there's so many questions to answer. And Alan Sills, as always, has maintained throughout this that, you know, we're going to change this process as new information becomes available. And it's, there's this constant flow of new information about a virus that we don't know, something that didn't exist this time a year ago. And if it did, nobody knew about it. And, you know, you have to wonder, well, if players are going to report, if rookies are going to report, how are they going to get there? How are they going to travel to the team? Are we going to test them before or after they get there? And are they going to be quarantined after they get there? And at what point does everybody get on the field? It's like a situation in a locker room where you're only going to be as safe as the least safe person in your entire franchise. And how do you run up to that? And I think, like, when Greg was starting the segment in terms of, you know, COVID-19 tying into everything, it just does. You know, I'm not sure that we would have talked about Washington changing their name if not for COVID-19, if not for the circumstances that led to millions of people getting into the street because they realized the inequities that they've experienced. A lot of other people in this country have been experiencing for a long time before the disease. And so it's made for this situation of heightened awareness about everything, where a league that is so firm in its decisions that, you know, it's basically the word of God every time that they have some edict, is now in a situation where there's pushback and they're reacting to it like, oh yeah, that pushback is probably right.
Right. They're negotiating. They're negotiating with the NFLPA, to their credit. In theory, they don't have to, according to the terms of the CBA. They could make their own terms and just say it. But I actually almost push back a little bit against all the criticism of all the leagues in the states that are coming back. Okay, so MLS has been trying to come back. They've already had some games canceled. They've had outbreaks. They've had troubles in different pockets. The NBA is trying to come back. Some of the players don't want to come back. So that's one thing. That'll happen in the NFL too, you would think. But more importantly, like, flights are getting delayed and some people are getting tested positive, like you mentioned, Patrick, before you get on the flight, and they're trying to figure that out with the bubble. Baseball is having similar issues, and these are the leagues that are just starting to even start the process to coming back. And I see a lot of fan reaction that's like, how can they not handle, you know, the MLS, you know, and people are just like really upset. And I just think, like, they're not built for this. And like, no. And we've said it, if the country's a mess, if the citizens and the government of this country can't handle it, why do you expect a league that is basically built to put on the field an incredible product that I love, professional football, and print money? Those are the two things that the NFL does incredibly well. There's no reason for me to think that the NFL or all these other leagues are going to be able to handle, much less college football, that's another conversation, are going to be able to handle the myriad of issues that come up. J.C. Treader, who you mentioned, Mark, you know, said kind of like, when you solve one little thing, it's like three other things pop up that you think of.
Right. I think if you look at college football, where it's not as, you know, you've got completely separate conferences acting and operating their own way, that what happens, and people will know by the time they listen to this to some degree, the Ivy League is talking about maybe being the conference that says, we're out of this, we're not doing this. We either you delay it or we play in the spring, but we're not jumping into this 2 weeks from now. And they were the first group way back when to say, we're shutting down sports when a bunch of other conferences refused to do that. And they were prophetic and correct in that choice. And so if that happens, I wonder if the, because you have to look at how college football operates a little bit. And if that became a way for other, maybe more conferences that didn't want to mention, hey, we'll do it first, to follow suit, that if college football decided to make this choice, because the problem is the spread of the virus would be the same for both, and even worse for college, because you're on college campuses and stuff. But the NFL has a long list of players that fall under the category of being susceptible to symptoms from coronavirus, body mass index issues, players with blood clot issues, players with all sorts of stuff, where I just wonder if you're an NFL player, there's a lot of pressure probably universally to jump back in, and we want to play, everyone wants the games, but also your safety, your family's safety. We could be in a situation where everyone's kids are home again next fall, And who is assessing the mental health of what all people have been through over the past 4 or 5 months? Just because you're a 23-year-old athlete, you need to run into the fray and play this season. We're seeing empowered athletes for other sports saying, no, not so fast, or you can, but I'm not going to, and I'm not going to be penalized for it. And will there be NFL players of note who make the same choice? Because their risk is higher than going out there and playing 18 holes of golf.
And we've already seen, I saw Adam Schein had an article on NFL.com on of the players under the most pressure. And I saw Von Miller on there. And I'm like, Von Miller is A, an asthmatic, B, is going to play a majority of his games at altitude, and C, is recovering from a respiratory disease that's killed 120,000+ people. So when we're talking about pressure, like, the pressure should be, first of all, as Greg was saying, on a federal government that should be tasked with doing these things, because preparing for a pandemic, you can't do that. Business isn't built to prepare for something that they don't know has happened. Businesses are built to make money. And so as Greg was saying, like, the NFL, Major League Baseball, all of these organizations, how are they supposed to handle something that specifically should be tasked by a competent federal government? Unfortunately, you know, we had a movement in this country for about 30 years to dismantle and undermine every action that a federal government might take, because supposedly it's bad. But here we are with, you know, we're going to come up on a half a million people dying, and people might finally start to realize that that's probably not the way to go. And it's frustrating to see, you know, players, families, and just general Americans being put in this situation when we could have taken an example from almost every other country in the world.
Right. I know. I'm thinking of our listeners overseas who are listening to us, and they just know, and they want to get their football too, but they have to be just thinking, you guys are a mess. You know, we're in the middle of it right now. We're all in California, everyone on this show right now. And like, we're in the middle of it. You know, it's the cases are as high as they've ever been. And just information is coming out. Knowledge about the virus is coming out, about how it's more of a blood vessel disease. You mentioned blood clots and Mark, and just, it's like, there's just so much that you don't know. But the things, like, we're trying to figure out that we do know, it's like everything needs to have an asterisk of, like, if this happens. So I am going to go through some of the proposals and, like, what's out there. Like, players want to show up with 80 players instead of 90. That sounds like that could happen. So it's like 10 less players. Players want, and this is a really interesting, no more than 20 players in a given facility at one time during the initial period, training, conditioning, covering the first 3 weeks at camp. So I had talked to some people that work for teams, and they had said they thought the first couple of weeks were going to be like OTAs. And that's why they never expected the preseason to really happen. That in a best case scenario, they're going to do OTAs, mini camps the first couple of weeks. So the players are saying they only want virtual meetings. They want sort of a, maybe it's like multiple squads of the team that show up, a maximum of 40 players at a time, even later in training camp. Again, these rules are all going to be negotiated and changed, but it does just get you thinking a little bit about how, even in a best case scenario for this going really well, look, the Premier League just tested almost 2,000 players. No one tested positive. I mean, no one would expect anything close to that happening here right now because of what's going on in our country. But like, people are, they are playing professional sports elsewhere. But it is worth thinking with these rule changes. Mark Murphy mentioned he thinks practice squads are going to get expanded a lot and maybe include veteran players. So it doesn't just have to be young players. These are some of the rules they're talking about. And even in a best case scenario, it's worth thinking about, okay, August is going to be very different of how the teams are ramping up. Even in like the NFL's dream scenario that everything stays on track to week one, it's going to be very different.
Well, then so the other guidelines talk about symptomatic players would be sidelined for a minimum of 10 days. Asymptomatic would be as little as 5 days if you pass 2 positive tests. And Philip Rivers on a call asked the question, you know, what if someone gets it and has 0 symptoms and feels fine days before the Super Bowl? They would be out. And like, that's fine. That's the Super Bowl. And who knows if we'll even experience a Super Bowl this year. But let's say you get into these early season games, because they seem determined to have this week one. I mean, that just seems, you've literally never heard anything else. We'll see if that happens too. But like the concept of being someone who plays fantasy football, the least of my concerns at this point, but like you could have people like major brand name stars in and out of the lineup left and right. And you could lose half your offensive line and you could face a fully healthy defensive line. It just seems that I don't hear a lot about that. What happens in mid-October when rosters are reduced and in shambles? There just doesn't seem to be much of that we're hearing. And we're kept in the dark as to what the continuity plan is when this stuff actually gets going.
The hope is that the hope all along, and it's just been a hope, not a plan, is that this country gets the virus under control. You know, as the governor of South Carolina said it.
Good luck with that.
Right. The governor of South Carolina, of all places, said it. He said, you know, if you want to see football, Clemson and South Carolina, you know, put on your masks, because right now there's no chance they're playing football. He used those words. And I think that it's a larger thing that if you go back even reading the Pro Football Talk articles from March, like the thought was daily testing was going to be simple by the time we get to training camp and that the virus would be under control, but it's not. So obviously the league is going to have to adjust.
And there's still a chance that we can have a better test with a more quick turnaround. I know that Tom Pelissero was hoping that was saying that the league's thought was that they could turn a test around in less than a day. And so once we lose that window where there's 3 to 4 days, you know, there's a hope, right, that we could get better at this, you know.
And they want daily testing. The league said every other day, but the union would like daily testing.
And honestly, because the spread of this virus happens before symptoms start. That's one thing that has been consistent. I think the CDC said 40% of the virus spread comes from people who have the virus, but they're not showing symptoms yet, but they're still shedding virus. And so it's, of course, like people and players should protect themselves, but I hate to keep coming back to it. It, as much as I would like to just shame everybody that's not wearing a mask, this is something that requires competent government.
You would be the guy to do it, right? Don't you think? Like, you know, like if the federal government was like, we've been reading some of your tweets, Claibon, you've been pretty tough on us, but we actually think you're the guy to shame everyone into wearing masks. I feel like you would be a strong guy. Ricky would be pretty good too.
Greg, you know, if this rendition of the federal government asked me to do anything, I would promptly, you know, send something back that would likely cost me my job.
All right. How about maybe the next just one? Just do it for California. You know, just do it for California. We're our own little state. Ricky would be good at that. She would get after people.
I think she would, too. But I have to say that things went south after on our NFL Network show right around Memorial Day that Ricky suggested that everyone get
everyone
out.
Go outside.
Go outside and enjoy yourselves and, you know,
that's
have a little
not
bit of
what
freedom.
I said. I said wear a mask,
right,
but get some fresh air because everyone's mental health is deteriorating at a rapid pace.
Sure, and there's a way to live. There's a way to live. We've been doing it for a couple months. We've been going out, been wearing a mask since this all started and been doing things. There's a way to be safe, like many countries around the world have been doing it.
But back to that ecosystem part of it, because it's not a bubble in Disney World. And I could even see players sneaking out of that bubble. Give me a break. But you're asking like vast amounts of people in every organization. Many of them, you know, I'm not just saying every player is young and thinks they're invincible. Nonsense. Plenty want to stay safe. But you're going to have to culturally get everyone on that team to say, we will not take a risk. And no one in our family will. They want to test all their family members. It's just a spider web. I mean, you're asking for 100% complete and clear, you know, following those rules. And that goes completely against the blueprint of what we're seeing in all 50 states, in various places.
Right. I mean, there was talk of maybe even, you know, fining players who act irresponsibly, which people got on. You know, I took that to mean they're reserving the right to it, you know, just as almost as a threat. But it all gets really murky. It's complicated. It's going to be part of the discussion. Sorry to all our listeners, you know, but we appreciate you you sticking out. You know, it's like if we, you know, it is what it is. But the last thing I want to mention on this was just the change in the proposal of how the media is going to cover it, because a lot of people probably don't know this. They were away from their computer. And I know it caught your eye, Mark, that four, I think it's going to be like four reporters will have access to the team and their daily practices, but they can't, it'll be very limited. They can't tweet out during practice. It's almost going to be like a pool report situation, like at the Super Bowl, where one person gets to kind of provide, you know, a somewhat generic report for the rest of the football world to know what happened there that day.
Yeah. I mean, in sort of instant cynical analysis and reply from a lot of old school beat writers is that the NFL has wanted to do this for a long time, or get closer to this.
And right, the Premier League, like, for instance, I mean, it's all European soccer. They are so much more restrictive on the media than the NFL or any American sport is.
Right. And we've been arcing towards that for a long time. Long gone are the days of, you know, a general manager hanging out with one reporter and having like a 4-hour dinner. It's like all those media times are now so stripped down and bare bones that you just wonder when we get back to normal, if and when, will the easing go back to full media, sweaty piles of like 18 guys surrounding one player, or is that a thing of the past? Because I mean, it affects coverage. I mean, exactly. The part of me is like, do I need media day at the Super Bowl? Well, I don't, but the league would like that to happen. So, you know, it's going to affect this season in ways that it'll be the freakiest campaign, whatever part of it exists, ever. And if you're a media person, you're a lot of them are going to be shut out from doing their jobs the way that they have been.
Can they travel? I mean, it's very, right. It's hard to think about. We do something at NFL Network called Inside Training Camp, which I'm sure they're trying to plan. But that involves, you know, reporters flying all around the country to 15 different
wearing
places.
Wearing these shirts left and right.
No, yeah. Mark's, yeah, wearing the shirt. That can't happen the same way. I can anticipate, though, if NFL Network keeps getting like one of those four spots, like, are they exempt from that rule? It's all, you know, or is TV exempt? I don't even, like, the details are a little murky right now, but I can already imagine the pushback of like, how come Garofalo gets every day at Eagles camp, you know, from the Philadelphia Inquirer reporters and everything.
Yeah, I just, the provisions of the media policy that don't have anything to do with a virus, you know, those kind of jump out to me in terms of what
was that?
What are we looking for? Like, tweeting during practice, and like the specifics of like, does specific plays include whether or not a quarterback is getting second team reps? Cause that's like basically the only story that we have, right?
You're not supposed to. I thought they said you're not supposed to mention where teams or players. And
some teams already were pretty restrictive, you know.
So
doing ITC, like, different teams have different rules. Like, I can think of some teams have adopted those rules already, and then some teams like the Cowboys are like, please give away as much as you can. We want you to talk to us. Please, like, we love it. We're gonna trot out Sean Lee, you know, to come talk to you guys right after Dez Bryant called him like a name on Twitter. Like, come back over here, Sean. You know, we love it.
I just love the idea that, like, you know, Bill Belichick is sitting there taking notes, watching NFL Network, like, oh, Moritz Boehringer took 6 reps, you know, with the third team. It's just like, no, like, it doesn't matter.
Can't believe Mobo got brought up on a show without Dan. We do have, before we go, we have a couple of very quick just football-y items, and one involves your team, Mark. So I was curious what your thought was when you heard David Njoku, the Browns tight end, asked for a trade.
Well, I'm not that surprised. I kind of think what I looked at that tight end group, they went out and signed Austin Hooper, and then they used a 4th round pick on Harrison Bryant. And, you know, we aren't college heads. And so around draft time, people will tweet us and say, you're going to love this player. I got like 25 people reaching out saying Harrison Bryant is going to be the dude like a year or two from now. So if you're David Njoku, you're thinking, how do I fit into this? It's gotten I was the lead guy here. Last year was injury ridden, thumb injury, out for 12 weeks. But I would say this, that they seem committed to him. And I don't think that they're bouncing off of this just to move him for, what are you going to get for him right now? Not enough value, right? Nothing. So, and I would say this, Kevin Stefanski in Minnesota last year, no team in the league, 50% of the time they ran 2 tight end sets. No other team in the league came close. So there is a chance here for David Njoku, who is going to start over Harrison Bryant this year, to say, you want to trade me after a great season. Or like, if you're Cleveland, like, there's a space for you. I don't think that he's necessarily the odd man out, as some would think. And a lot of people close to the team think that Njoku, like, they believe in the potential because he looks like he looks the part, and he's had he's not reached it yet. So do you go and like it's sort of like Jamal Adams? Do you go and trade him for something less than you'd want to just because he's got a new agent and he's making demands? I don't think that's a good look for a struggling organization trying to become something better.
I think like in terms of Njoku, he just wants to see the potential come to fruition with how the Browns could utilize him. And he's looking at a situation where he's going into a contract and he would like to show, you know, he would like to be somewhere where a team is going to utilize him. And I just don't think that they've done enough to show him that, hey, we're going to feature you. You're going to be a big part of our offense. And so also
I mean, last year he was hurt for he was out for like three quarters of the season. And I think that affected their offense.
Their plan changes every year. I mean, their coach, right. Their offensive staff changes literally every single season. I think that was a great point in Stefanski's offense. I mean, that should be their base offense. That's their four best receivers. They don't really have a third wide receiver. So that they're pretty thin actually at wideout. Everyone thinks that's a huge strength for them, but they're an injury away, you know, from Landry or Odell to being like really thin there. So yeah, have Hooper and Njoku on the field most of the time. Why not? That's going to create a lot of problems. Another player that we're not 100% sure is going to be on the field is Chris Jones. I did want to just mention that he tweeted out some doubt that he would play at all this year. And maybe people were reading into the tweets a little too much, but the threat is out there. He's one of the players that is, franchise tag and has until July 15th to sign a new contract. There are no contracts expected maybe really for any of those guys. And Jones seems to be very far away. And you wouldn't think that the Patrick Mahomes contract would make the Chiefs any closer to signing Jones. So it's just a situation to watch for a really, really good player. I mean, one of the best five interior rush guys in the entire NFL, I would say. That's it. Just want to mention Chris Jones. Let's wrap up with Cam Newton. Cam Newton had a quote this last weekend where he expressed that it's no longer time to be humble. I'm tired of being humble. Because if you're humble, they're just going to – if you're humble and you're staying quiet, they're just going to dog you like they have been anyways. Ricky, as someone who probably doesn't get called humble too often and a Patriots fan, what was your reaction here?
Let me just process that. You have to throw a dig at me before I get to
You and Cam might be more alike than you think. Great Instagram game, you know, big personality, flashy. Like, I think this is, you guys are simpatico.
Yeah, I've been called humble a lot, FYI. I think that he has sort of like, as much as I do dislike him a little bit from some past previous stuff, I do think that like he was completely, you know, ripped around this off season. And I think he deserves to be able to say, hey, look, I'm freaking Cam Newton. Like I'm not going to just sit back and just be grateful that all of a sudden a team wants me. Like he's going to turn that into something good. And I hope he goes out there and kicks ass for the Patriots. Yeah, I do, Greg.
Good. There's an edge to that. I like the, I love the idea of, Cam Newton's never going to be, a boring starting quarterback. Like that was never going to happen. So I don't know. I love the like Cam Newton logo of the Patriots. I don't know if you've seen that where he's the flying Elvis with the hit. It's the whole thing. I'm looking forward to this experience. I don't know if I quite expressed that as much on the episode that we had of him. I mean, no matter what, all of it, I'm just with it that this Cam Newton Patriots thing is going to be, even if it doesn't go well, it's going to be fascinating.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say to Erica and Greg and everybody else who likes the Patriots, I hope you can come to terms with accepting a quarterback who routinely puts himself as him against the world, who has his own logo, who has his own brand, who makes cryptic Instagram posts. And it's kind of weird. I hope you can adjust to having a quarterback that meets all of those things.
It'll be a change for before. Sure. It'll be an adjustment for sure.
Well, and there were a lot of people wondering, oh, does this mean we'll never hear from Cam Newton again, that he'll become, another sort of synthetic robot that you seem to just plug into a wall for 6 days, then he goes out and destroys people on Sunday. No, I think they're going to let him. This is, even though everyone's going to say it's Belichick and nothing will change there, there might be a little bit of a culture shift to some degree if when you have Cam Newton at quarterback. I mean, is he going to be allowed to, whether I like it or not, is going to be allowed to dress as, you know, the grandma on the run during post game press conferences? I hope he is. Like, why not let him be him? So
of course. All right. Patrick's battery's at 3%. I don't know if that's like rhetorical or like literal, because when did you start taping NFL Now this morning? I know they start pre-taping it very
good
early.
Time for follow-up questions. Yeah, as it now veers towards 2%, but okay.
No, it's been about a couple hours because I had this thing out. This is my wife's laptop and I don't really know a lot about it. Apparently I don't know how to plug it in. So I just looked up and I was like,
the day last week I did it, like Andrew and we started taping that thing at 7:20 in the morning. So you've been doing this now. It's now 2 in the afternoon. We should let you go. We should go. This show's long. We had a whole segment planned. But you know, we're scrapping it because we're going to save it. And the news was just beautiful today. It was not beautiful actually, but, it was newsy.
I'm just laughing real quick. Mark, you said sweaty, you know, reporters or whatever. When I was home back visiting, my two younger brothers, they call people, like, instead of saying loser or like making fun of someone, they call people sweaty nerds.
I love it.
So I think that you could use it in your vocabulary for sure.
And I've got some breaking news too. We are going to, for the first time ever, spin the wheel of teams on our Instagram handle. And we'll be. Oh. You're gonna have to go there and find that out.
Breaking.
That was
it's news to me. Okay,
yeah, we're just breaking news all over the place. You can check it out there, and we will we'll find out what team that is. Talk about them on Wednesday. Who knows? That's it. Thank you, Patrick, for jumping on a day you were busy.
No, thank you guys. Always fun.
And for Patrick Claibon, for Dan Hansis, you know, in the Gatesville Messenger out there in Texas, for Wes and Keisha, why not? Mark Sessler, Ricky Hollywood, I'm Greg. We will see you Wednesday.
Sweaty nerd.
Who's a sweaty nerd?